Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. Doctors Natasha Bari and Deneng Lee, both from City of Hope, spoke about their manuscript titled Casting a Wide Net, When is the Optimal Time for 177 Lu Dotatate Treatment?, which was published in the November 2024 issue of the journal Oncology. The conversation focused on the potential clinical utility of the radioligand therapy 177 lutetium dotatate for patients with neuroendocrine tumors based on prior data from the NETTER-1 and NETTER-2 trials.
What was the background for this article focused on this radioligand therapy in neuroendocrine tumors? How has the treatment landscape sort of evolved for this patient population over time before the advent of lutetium dotatate?
So our focus in this article was mainly inoperable and metastatic neuroendocrine tumors. So most people actually present a diagnosis with metastatic disease. The treatment for these metastatic neuroendocrine tumors prior to lutetium dotatate coming to the scene was somatostatin analogs, so lanreotide, octreotide, targeted therapies like pan-TKI inhibitors, sunitinib, and mTOR inhibitors like everolimus, as well as chemotherapy.
I absolutely agree with Dr. Bari in the sense that, you know, really the landscape for neuroendocrine tumors were, you know, somewhat limited, right? And everything. You're often talking about, you know, maybe, you know, two or maybe, you know, three lines of prior treatment that was available to these patients. And I really think that, you know, lutetium 177 dotatate, what was really helpful for our patients in terms of offering another opportunity at, you know, controlling this disease, which oftentimes our patients, you know, really would like to have.
I see. Thank you both for kind of setting the stage for this new radioligand, the 177 lutetium dotatate. I know based on your article, it has been evaluated in a number of different studies, including the NETTER-1 trial. So regarding that study, what do data from NETTER-1 show about the efficacy and safety of this radioligand therapy in this neuroendocrine tumor population?
So NETTER-1 was a randomized control trial, phase 3 trial that was evaluating safety and efficacy of 177 Lu dotatate. And it was looking specifically at advanced midgut tumors, so from your jejunal ileum to your proximal colon, that were not previously responsive to somatostatin analog. It specifically looked at grade 1 or 2 well-differentiated neuroendocrine tumors. So they had two groups, the experimental group, which was made up of 111 patients that got the Lutathera therapy in 4 treatments of IV infusions every 8 weeks with the addition of long-acting repeat octreotide on the day after infusion, and then monthly after the 4 treatments had completed. The control group was 110 patients that received high-dose octreotide. So the primary endpoint for the study was progression-free survival at month 20. It was 65.2% of patients that hadn't progressed at in the Lutathera group versus 10.8% in the control group. And the median overall survival when looking at kind of the review data from that study was 48 months in the experimental group versus 36.3 months in the control group. In terms of toxicities, grade 3 or 4 neutropenia, thrombocytopenia, and lymphopenia occurred in 1, 2, and 9% of patients respectively in the patients that were in the Lu dotatate group and none in the control group. And clinically significant myelosuppression occurred, so then in less than 10% of patients, but 2% of patients of the 111 that were treated with the Lutathera did develop MDS, and one patient passed away.
You know, Dr. Bari really nicely have been able to kind of summarize the data. I think, you know, clearly NETTER-1 established, you know, significant efficacy with lutetium 177 dotatate for neuroendocrine tumors. And this data really targeting that mid-gut neuroendocrine tumor population was then, you know, combined with data from the Erasmus experience to get a FDA approval in terms of for all, you know, gastroenteral pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors and anything, you know, based off of the efficacy. So I think the efficacy is really great with this agent. But I think, you know, the question that remains is, you know, where do we, you know, ultimately sequence these, this type of treatment in the landscape that we have, you know, previously? Because as mentioned, the safety, while most patients are able to be able to tolerate this treatment very, very well, there are some of these, you know, rare serious side effects like, you know, MDS, which can be absolutely devastating. So for a patient that develops that, then it changes their entire, you know, treatment journey. So I think we always have to kind of keep that in mind as we're trying to decide where this really fits into our overall paradigm for patients with neuroendocrine tumors.
So on top of this trial, there was also NETTER-2, which assessed the use of this radioligand therapy. And so what do the efficacy and safety findings from NETTER-2 suggest about the potential utility of lutetium dotatate in neuroendocrine tumors?
NETTER-2 looked at the same radioligand pharmaceutical, the Lutathera, in patients with locally advanced or metastatic well-differentiated somatostatin receptor-positive neuroendocrine tumors. A little bit different in the population because the definition of well-differentiated grade 3 tumors didn't exist when NETTER-1 was done. The WHO put forward the new classification in 2017, and the NETTER-1 was done prior to that and was published in early 2017. So this is actually looking at high grade 2 or grade 3 well-differentiated neuroendocrine tumors, which is a Ki-67 of above 20%, but less than 55%. So they were looking within that population in gastropancreatic neuroendocrine tumors. So again, it's a little bit different than NETTER-1. So no grade 1 well-differentiated tumors were included in NETTER-2. So similarly to NETTER-1, patients that were in the experimental arm, which were 151 patients, received Lutathera therapy for 4 cycles, plus the long-acting repeat octreotide every 4 weeks, and the day after therapy when they were receiving the lutetium, compared to the control arm that received high-dose octreotide, which was 75 patients. So their study, their primary endpoint was also progression-free survival. So median progression-free survival was 22.8 months in the experimental group and 8.5 months in the control group. No overall survival data is quite available yet. At the end of the study, there was nothing kind of defining. In terms of safety, most of the common adverse effects that we saw were nausea, diarrhea, abdominal pain, and that was present in both groups, which is kind of expected with the somatostatin analog therapy that we've seen prior. But in the Lutathera group, we did find that the patients continued to have hematologic toxicity. They were reported in 20 of the patients of the 151 that received the Lutathera, and only one patient in the control. And again, one patient did develop myelodysplastic syndrome in the Lutathera group.
This was a somewhat aggressive patient population. You know, usually neuroendocrine tumors are thought to be, you know, somewhat indolent. So by taking Ki-67 that's a little bit higher, you're really taking a patient population where their tumor cells are, you know, maybe dividing, you know, much quicker. And I think what's interesting about the efficacy data is that you're seeing a fairly high objective response rate, you know, here with lutetium-177 dotatate in the frontline setting. So, I think that's, you know, potentially very encouraging for those patients that have, you know, maybe more aggressive disease to be able to potentially shrink the tumors and have, you know, possible symptomatic, you know, benefit and everything. But again, I think the challenge is that, you know, given that the safety data is somewhat similar to NETTER-1, when is the time to really use this going forward?
So that covers like most of the efficacy outcomes and the toxicity data associated with the radioligand and NETTER-2. I know that in your article, there's also a discussion related to some of the quality of life considerations as they relate to the NETTER-2 trial. So my follow-up question is, how might the quality of life data further inform treatment decision-making?
So previous studies that were looking at the goals of neuroendocrine tumor patients emphasized the importance of quality of life, so thought it was important to kind of include that point of view. A cross-sectional survey study that's been done asked patients with advanced neuroendocrine tumors who were getting a new line of treatment what their goals were. And a majority of these patients, 70% of them, indicated that their primary goal of treatment was actually not survival, but really maintenance of quality of life and reduction in symptomaticity. So they stated that both quantity and quality of life were important, not just quantity. The NETTER-2 data didn't show any difference at this juncture. Now, again, we're kind of waiting for further information from them, kind of long-term follow-up information, but there was no difference in the quality of life metrics. So it's important to kind of think about how these patients' goals align with the therapy that we're giving. And if we're not seeing a difference in quality of life quite yet, kind of looking at individual patients and seeing what their goals are and matching them up to the therapy that we're giving them.
I absolutely agree. I think, you know, quality of life is, you know, really paramount here. Most recently at the NANETS, annual conference this year, we had a great debate about, you know, NETTER-2 and everything. And what was, you know, expressed from the patient population is that, you know, patients really valued, you know, quality of life. I think what's, you know, very surprising to me from the NETTER-2 data is that, you know, when you get such great efficacy, that's been demonstrated usually for a more aggressive type of tumor biology, you would suspect that there might be, you know, potential improvements in quality of life. And unfortunately, you know, from NETTER-2, you don't necessarily see that statistical difference in terms of, you know, improving quality of life or delaying deterioration in terms of quality of life. So that does give you a little bit of pause in terms of, you know, what is the rationale to potentially do this earlier if there is not necessarily, let's say, an overall survival benefit, and if there's not necessarily a improvement in terms of quality of life, then is that progression-free survival benefit by itself or objective response, you know, justified, and is that enough for the patient, you know, taking this type of treatment in the upfront setting?
I see. And now I believe it was said already, unless I'm mishearing, that we are awaiting further follow-up on the quality of life data for NETTER-2. But beyond that, what would you say are the next steps for researching treatment with this radioligand therapy in neuroendocrine tumors or perhaps other patient populations as well?
Yeah, so I think that, like you were saying, that the NETTER-2 data will be really important, not only for quality of life data, but overall survival and safety data as well. See how these patients have truly done and if there are any differences between the groups that have come up over time. I think another thing that's really important is looking at these populations that are developing the heme toxicities. Is there a way that we can pull these people out and know who's at risk, so that we can remove them from risk? I think also it's important to focus on the quality of life data in not just in NETTER-2, but across all the studies that are done with the radioligand therapy, and always put the patient in the center of the studies that we do.
To further add on this and to expand this, I think, you know, we're just at the very beginning, you know, with lutetium-177 dotatate, despite the fact that, you know, we've had this you know, treatment modality in the U.S. for, you know, several years now. I think there's, you know, still much more that we can do. You know, one idea is that there's still a large proportion of patients that are not necessarily having a good response to lutetium-177 dotatate. And so then, you know, how do we make sure that more patients, you know, have a response to this type of treatment? So there are early phase combination strategies through different cooperative groups in the setting for our patients. And then I think in addition to that, you know, what do you do after someone, you know, ultimately progresses on lutetium-177 dotatate? So there are what's known as retreatment trials with this agent as well as with other agents to see whether or not, you know, patients can continue to really benefit from this treatment on a retreatment basis. Or should you go to something else moving forward in that setting? So really, you know, I think we're just at the very beginning stages, and there's still a lot to improve. And that ultimately, it's really, again, finding, you know, who are the right patients for this type of treatment? When should we give this treatment? So additional sequencing studies or, you know, potential biomarker-driven studies of, you know, who's most likely going to have the maximum benefit to treatment. I think those are also additional avenues to explore going forward.
And considering all that we've discussed today, if you had to sum it all up, what do you hope your colleagues take away from your article and this conversation?
I think that the most important thing is that NETTER-2 really provides some great results in terms of progression-free survival, and we're really excited about what Lutathera can do for patients, especially in these great high-grade, grade 2 and grade 3 NETs. But we still do have questions about, like, who is the best patient to give this therapy to in the first line setting. And in the absence of overall survival and quality data, in addition to the risk of MDS and the development of acute leukemia, we really need to kind of understand better to characterize optimal timing of this therapy.
Yeah, I think it's really to allow our, you know, colleagues to have, you know, more of a awareness, right? Like, I think a lot of times in oncology, when we have kind of a shiny new tool for our patients, we just want to, you know, jump in and give all of our patients kind of the shiny tool. But this really kind of, as Dr. Bari mentioned, you know, echoes of, like, what is the ideal patient and everything? Because we know that this shouldn't be just from the NETTER-2, even the NETTER-1 results, that we're automatically going to use this, particularly in the first line setting. So I think there's a lot of nuances in terms of, you know, who is the ideal patient that's going to maximally benefit and minimize any risk of, you know, serious toxicity in those patients. And as a result of that, we're actually, you know, helping to really improve their outcomes to those, you know, highest bars possible, whether it's quality of life or survival, because certainly I think our patients are really asking for all those things. So rather than, you know, jumping, you know, completely in to say that we're going to give anyone that has, you know, grade 2 or higher, you know, gastroenteropancreatic neuroendocrine tumors, lutetium 177 dotatate in the frontline setting, really trying to, you know, figure out, all right, where are the buckets of patients that we're going to do this, and who are the ones that we actually do have time to, you know, still hold back and everything and really help in the future.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.